Hey, early risers, thank you for getting up early to worship with us. So glad that you're here this weekend. I want to welcome those of you that are watching online as well. You know, last weekend we started a new series, and we talked last weekend about the capital C church. The church over the last 2,000 years all over the world, and we talked about how important it is and the fact that there really is nothing like the church. And then we saw last week and how Jesus sent out the 12 disciples, and then he sent out the 72 disciples, and he basically said to them, you know, church is not just something that you come and watch. He said to them, church is something that you go and do. He said, like I've written the letter A, I want you to go and do what you've been watching me go and do. And the 12 and the 72, they did that. And they began to change the world. And then Jesus launched one more mission after this. And this comes at the very end of the Gospel of Matthew, in Matthew 28, verses 18 to 20. Very familiar verses. Jesus says, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. And unbelievably enough, that tiny little group of people and that tiny little mission that Jesus gave them 2,000 years ago is still going strong today. I mean, what are the odds of that, right? And yet, here we are. Now, this text in Matthew 28 is so central that it came to be called the Great Commission. Do you know why it's called the Great Commission? It's because that is the mission for the entire church. We have been given that mission. And if you are a follower of Jesus, that is your mission as well. Now, as followers of Jesus and as a local church family, sometimes we sort of forget why we're here. So sometimes it's good to be reminded. So I want to give you a little image that I hope at least will remind you of why we're here. Let's take that video, that off the video screen for a moment. You know, there's a little museum on Nantucket Island in Massachusetts. We'll go ahead and put the picture up now. And this museum tells about a volunteer organization that was formed on Nantucket Island a few centuries ago. And in those days, travel by sea was extremely dangerous. Because of the storms and the rocky coast, a lot of lives were lost in shipwrecks that happened within the sight of land. So, what I've written in number two, a group of volunteers went into the life-saving business. And they banded together and they formed what they called a life-saving society. And they built shelters all along the shore of Nantucket Island. And they put boats and equipment and food in these shelters. And they called those little shelters huts of refuge. Huts of refuge. And they had people, all volunteers, by the way, who were watching the coast all the time. And whenever a ship went down, word would go out. And these people would risk everything they had to save every single life they could. And they did this for no money, no recognition, no praise, nothing. They just did it because they prized human life so much. And to remind each other in the life-saving society how seriously they took this task, they adopted a motto for the life-saving society. The motto of the life-saving society was, you have to go out but you don't have to come back. Those are kind of sobering words, right? You wouldn't think that would be a very effective recruiting slogan, you know? But it actually was. All kinds of people raised their hand and said, I'll sign up for that. And these people would risk everything, even their lives, to save people they had never met. Why? Because they were in the life-saving business. That's what they wanted to do. Well, what happened is over time, over about the next 100 years, things began to change. And after a while, the United States Coast Guard was formed. And eventually, the idea that carried the day among the life-saving society was, let's just let the professionals do it. They're better trained. They get paid for this. So let's just not do it anymore. And so those people, the life-saving society, they stopped manning those little huts of refuge. Volunteers stopped searching the coastline for ships that are going down. They stopped sending out people to help and rescue drowning people. Now, one of the things that's sort of funny about this is that these people in the life-saving society, they couldn't bring themselves to actually disband. So they just kept meeting together. They would have dinners together. They would give out community awards, service awards, and all that. They would enjoy one another's company. But they weren't in the life-saving business anymore. You know, that kind of thing happens all the time. That kind of thing happens in churches all the time. People forget. Followers of Jesus, we oftentimes forget that we are in the life-saving business. That's the mission that Jesus gave us 2,000 years ago. And yet, we forget. And when people in churches forget this, they usually don't disband, at least not until many years later. People in churches who forget this, they still meet together. They still enjoy one another's company. They may have services and programs. But they're not sending people out anymore. They're not looking for people all around them who are sort of going down in life. And so they stop inviting other people to church. They stop looking for opportunities to share their testimony with other people who are far from God. They stop praying for the sick and ministering to the poor and trying to cast out demons, those kinds of things. They just stop. They're not risking anymore. And why do people in churches do that? Well, because people in churches get busy, don't we? We just get preoccupied with all kinds of stuff. Bills to pay, ladders to climb, things to do, things to buy, all that. And we just begin to forget that that the world really is filled with people who are hurting. People who are addicted. People who are broken. People who are poor. People who are hungry. We forget, number six, that there's a lot of people out there who are very far from God. And we forget that those people far from God, they don't have a clue that they matter to God. And they don't have a clue that they matter to us either. Now, churches like this, they'll still hold services every week. They still have buildings and programs and staff and all that kind of stuff. But they're not in the life-saving business anymore. By the way, do you know what there is on Nantucket Island today? There's not a life-saving society, but there is a yacht club. Now, a yacht club is very different from a life-saving society. Because, see, a yacht club is built for the comfort of the members who are in the yacht club. In fact, I know this will be hard for you to believe. In fact, if the yacht club doesn't reach a high enough level of comfort, people in the yacht club actually begin to complain. And they'll have arguments about the food in the yacht club and the furnishings, the furniture, the dress code in the yacht club. They'll complain that their needs are not being met by the yacht club. But you know, people in the life-saving business, they don't argue about food or furnishings or furniture or the dress code or whether or not their needs happen to be met. You know why? Because they're involved in something so much more important than that. They're in the life-saving business. Now, I do want to say there's nothing really wrong with a yacht club. I mean, I guess boats are kind of cool. But it's really important for you and I to know the difference. See, look at number 7. A yacht club exists for the sake of the people who are already part of the club. But a life-saving society exists for people who are not yet part of the club. And I want you to know something. We at the Vineyard, we're never going to become a yacht club. Never. We will never exist for the sake of the people who are already in. We are not called by Jesus to be a yacht club. We are called by Jesus to be in the life-saving business. That's who we are. And by the way, if you're part of our church, you need to know that right up front, because that's your calling. You are called to be in the life-saving business. In fact, it's interesting. Look at letter C. The church was the very first organization in human history that was created for the benefit of non-members. And you know who's the one who thought it up? Jesus. Jesus is the one who said, "Now you go." You go. Now, last weekend, we looked at the beauty of the capital C church around the world. But this week, we're going to look at the reality of our church, Vineyard Church North Phoenix. And we're going to look at part of the mission, what part of the mission is that we believe God has given us here at the Vineyard. And then we're going to look at, well, what does that mean for you? And what does that mean for me? And last of all, we're going to look at the question, are we going to be all in to the mission of Jesus? So here's the mission of Jesus we believe that God has given us. We're called to transform ordinary people into extraordinary followers of Christ. If you've been around for a while, you have that memorized because we talk about it. But I want to break down that mission just a little bit for you. What does this actually mean? Well, first of all, it means this. We want everybody to be in a transforming relationship with Jesus Christ. Everybody. Now, again, last weekend we talked about the beauty of the church over the ages. And we looked at some of the great phrases in the Bible about the church, like the body of Christ. But let me tell you what the most glorious thing is about the church. Some of you know this little rhyme. It goes like this. See if I can do it. Here's the church. Here's the steeple. Open the door and what? See all the people. See, the most glorious thing about the church is people. Redeemed humanity. Because, see, when Jesus gets a hold of a life, it's amazing how he transforms that person into a new person. In fact, way back at the very beginning of the church, 2,000 years ago, Jesus got a hold of a guy by the name of Simon. And he's this sort of loud, insecure guy. But he ends up, because Jesus got a hold of him, he ends up becoming a rock. That Jesus called Peter. Jesus ends up getting a hold of a guy by the name of Saul. He's murderous. He felt superior. And yet Saul becomes a missionary to the very Gentiles that he opposed so much. And he ends up becoming the Apostle Paul. A little widow named Dorcas becomes a hero in the early church. Mary Magdalene has her life completely turned upside down by Jesus. And then over the centuries, people like Francis of Assisi and Martin Luther and St. Augustine and Martin Luther King Jr., Mother Teresa, Billy Graham, and these people just shine like stars in our world. See, the church's greatest gift, the church's greatest asset, the church's greatest resource is people. People like you. People like those sitting next to you right now. So here's the question. What's the church's biggest problem? Same answer. People. People like the person sitting next to you right now. In fact, turn to the person next to you and say to them, "You're a problem." Now turn back and say to the other person who said that, "You're a bigger problem." Look at number two. People are the church's greatest resource and the church's biggest problem. And why are we the church's biggest problem? Because even though we get redeemed, we're still filled with humanity, aren't we? We still have all kinds of imperfections in us that Jesus is still working on. But I want to remind you today, the church is the only hope of the world. Because it's the only way that human beings can be redeemed through Jesus, through his church. Now, one of the problems that some followers of Jesus have is that once they surrender their life to Jesus, oftentimes they just sort of want to stop there. Some followers of Jesus, maybe you're like this, but some followers of Jesus feel like, well, once I have my fire insurance, then that's all I really need. I don't really want to go any further. You know, many followers of Jesus, we don't really want to risk and call other people to follow Jesus. We don't really want to risk and invite our coworkers who are far from God to come to church. We don't really want to look for opportunities to share our faith. We don't really want to learn how to pray for the sick or minister to the poor or cast out a demon. We don't really want to do that. We just want to stop here. So let me say something about that. Remember, we just read, Jesus said in the Great Commission, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." Now, how much authority is all authority? Just say it out loud. All. And I realize we are a very self-sufficient culture, aren't we? And we resist having to submit ourselves to any other authority. We don't really like to do that. In fact, you can find all kinds of studies that tell us that Americans today want to, quote, customize their religion to fit their personal needs. You know, as Americans, we sort of like faith. We sort of like spirituality. And why do we like faith and spirituality? Because it gives us comfort whenever we think about death or, you know, whenever we have a problem or something. But what we want is we want a designer faith, a customized faith, a faith that is going to meet my personal needs. In fact, one Christian author said this. He said, "We're headed toward a day when we'll be a nation of 310 million people with 310 million religions." Well, as followers of Jesus, we always need to be reminded that Jesus did not say to us, "Hey, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to you." He didn't say that. He said, "All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me." And then remember, right after Jesus said that, what did he say? He said, go therefore and make disciples of all the nations. That's our mission. Go and make disciples. Let me ask you, are you going? Are you going to your workplace with the attitude that God is calling you there to make disciples? Are you going to your neighbors with the attitude that God is calling you to go and make disciples? Are you going to your family members? Are you going to your friends? If you're a follower of Jesus, that is your mission. You're called to go. Now, what that doesn't mean is that you try to go and make people call themselves Christians. We're not into that. It means we're to actually make those people into disciples of Jesus. That means a real follower of Jesus Christ. And then after Jesus tells us to go, he says this in verse 20, and teach them to observe all that I've commanded you. So while we go and talk to people, our coworkers and all that, we're to teach them to observe. That means obey all that Jesus commanded us. How's that one going for you? If you're a follower of Jesus, just think about your own life. Are you obeying everything Jesus commanded you? And I want you to know, everything Jesus commanded us, obeying that, it's not oppressive. It's not a list of rules. It's just learning to live in this moment with love. With love for God. With love for others. It's to have joy and to have peace that comes from knowing that my well-being is not at risk. See, a designer faith, a customized faith that so many Americans want to have, that doesn't transform somebody's character. But Jesus wants to transform your character. So, our mission. We want everyone to be in a transforming relationship with Jesus Christ. And by the way, if you're new to our church, we're very serious about this. Because, see, I have a dream that one day we are a community of thousands and thousands of people who are all very serious about saying, you know, I'm going to put my time, my energy, my money, my dreams, my ambitions, my mouth, my sexuality, my attitudes, everything's going to come under the authority of Jesus. Where thousands and thousands of people are basically saying, Jesus, I'm all in. I'm all in. That's my dream. Wouldn't that be amazing if that happened? So, part of what we're doing today is we're trying to assess, starting out the new year, trying to assess where we're at. So I want you to look at number 4. Where are you at as far as being in a transforming relationship with Jesus Christ? Where are you at? Some of you would say, well, Brian, I'm just starting out on this. Great, man, keep going. Others of you would say, I really feel like I'm growing in my relationship with Jesus. That's fantastic. Man, keep going. Maybe you'd say, well, I'm on the journey. Keep on the journey. No matter where you're at in this transforming relationship with Jesus, just maybe there's a next step that Jesus wants you to take. And I don't know what your next step might be. I think for some of you, your next step is Jesus is wanting you to be water baptized. That's an act of obedience unto the Lord. You know, we've had a lot of people end up coming to Christ by God's grace over the last 3 months or so. If you're one of those people, you need to be water baptized. I will tell you, biblically, that's your next step. At least it's one of them. Or maybe your next step is to join a Bible study. Maybe your next step is maybe you're a brand new Christian. Well, we have Bible study for, you know, new believers. Maybe that's your next step. You know, maybe when I'm talking about praying for the sick, you're like, man, I don't know how to pray for the sick. I understand that. None of us know how to pray for the sick until we've been trained how to do that. We'll train you how to pray for sick people. It's called ministry training. It's classes that we do here at the Vineyard. Maybe that's your next step. You need to get better trained. You know, maybe you realize that money is the thing that's really thwarting your relationship with Jesus. And you know, Jesus wants you to be free with your money. And so maybe your next step is you need to begin tithing. Or maybe you need to get back to tithing like you used to. Or for some of you, you know, just like my wife and I, probably 25 years ago, we felt like the Lord wanted us to give back to God way more than just 10%, the tithe. And so we've been doing that for the last 25 plus years. Maybe that's your next step. Maybe Jesus is challenging you in that. Or maybe you're a prisoner of anger, and it's time for you to get some help and break free. Or maybe your marriage is dying, and it's time for you to tell some other people and begin to get some counseling and some help. Maybe that's your next step. Maybe you've never really surrendered your life fully to Jesus. That would be your next step. What's your next step? And then, will you take it? Will you put your entire life under the authority of Jesus Christ and have a transforming relationship with Him as more important than anything else? So, our mission statement: transforming ordinary people into extraordinary followers of Christ. So, how do we do that? Look at number three. How do we become extraordinary followers of Christ? Now, there's so many things that I could talk to you about that would help you to become an extraordinary follower of Christ. But I want to focus on two things that I think will really help you in becoming an extraordinary follower of Christ. The first one, letter A, is by learning to live in community with some other people. Now, in the scriptures, this is fascinating. Out of all the Gospels are biographies of Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Out of all four of the Gospels, every one of them tell us the names of the 12 disciples. They just sort of list them out for us. But when Matthew does it, in Matthew chapter 10, he does something that I think is really interesting, and I think it's very insightful about the kind of community that Jesus is trying to build. Matthew, like all the other gospel writers, gives us the names of the 12 disciples, except in two cases. He also gives us one of the disciples' political affiliation and the other disciple's job. The political affiliation is for a disciple named Simon, and he was called Simon the Zealot. See, zealots hated the Romans. In fact, zealots hated Rome so much that they advocated violence. And so to a Roman, a zealot was a political terrorist. And the biggest flashpoint over this had to do with taxes. Because zealots believed that paying taxes to Rome wasn't just a bad idea, it was actually an act of idolatry. Therefore, the zealots wanted to kill the Romans. And about the only people that zealots hated worse than Romans were fellow Israelites who became tax collectors. And why did they hate them so much? Because tax collectors would collect taxes from their own people and then give that money to Rome. See, tax collectors were willing to get wealthy off of their own people in order to benefit Rome. And so to a zealot, a tax collector wasn't just an enemy like a Roman. A tax collector was a traitor. I mean, tax collectors were the worst kind of enemies. So one of the disciples, one of the 12, was named Simon the Zealot. And then we find out another one of the disciples was named Matthew. And anybody want to take a guess on what Matthew's job was? He was a tax collector. How do you think Matthew and Simon got along with one another? How do you think how excited they were when they found out they were going to be in the same small group? You know, I don't know who said this, but it's pretty true. Look at number two. The community of Jesus is the place where the person you least want to be present is always present. And why does Jesus do that? He does it on purpose. Why? So that we would learn to love people that we don't even like. You know, in our world today, the church, our church and lots of other churches, are doing some really great things. But in many of those churches, you know what? Almost everybody in the church fits in the same category. They're all the same age. They're all the same color. They're all the same ethnicity. They all have the same tastes. They all have the same political affiliation. They all listen to the same kind of music. They have the same educational background, all of that. Let me tell you a secret. Our world is not starving for a church where people love others who are just like them. No. Our world is starving for a church where people love other people who are different from them. That's what the world's starving for. Because when the Holy Spirit really breaks in and it begins to get hold of some people, that's when all kinds of barriers between people begin to come down. Barriers concerning race and color and ethnicity and political affiliation and educational levels and economic levels and generations and all that. And one of the things that I so love about our church is the diversity. I mean, we are an incredibly diverse church, and that's only by the grace of God. But I want to ask you, do you love being part of a diverse church? And then I want to follow up with this. How are you doing at loving other people who are different from you? See, you cannot be in a transforming relationship with Jesus and not be in some kind of authentic community with real people. Can't be done. In other words, look at number four. There's no believing in Jesus without belonging to his body. You know, there's really three commitments that people have to make to Jesus. And really, they all need to happen about the same time. You need to make a commitment to Christ. But after that, you make a commitment to his church. And then after that, you make a commitment to his cause. Christ, church, cause. You're not really a true disciple of Jesus until you've made a true commitment to all three of those things. And at our church, we have this wonderful opportunity to actually love people who are very different from us. You say, what do you mean? Well, here at the Vineyard, we have old people and we have young people coming together and learning how to love one another. We have tattooed people and non-tattooed people coming together, learning to love one another. We have rich people and poor people. We have right people and left people. We have black people and white people. We have blue bloods. We have lovers of rock. We have lovers of Bach. We have all that. We have people here who come in blue jeans. Some people come in blue suits. Some people come with blue hair. We have people who look, think, act, talk, sing, eat, everything differently than you do. And yet we're all drawn to Jesus And we need to learn to love one another. And you know what the best way to learn to love other people who are different from you is? By joining a small group. When you're in a big church like this, you're never going to learn to love other people unless you break it down into a smaller group. And right now we're starting of all of our small groups, well over 100 small groups, starting from scratch. It's a great time to join. That's why we're having our small group fair out in the hardscape area. If you're not part of a small group, man, make sure after service you check out some of the different small groups, take a few of the different flyers, and then if you go to a small group and that group's not for you, don't give up. Go to a different group. Eventually, you will find the right group for you. So, how do we become extraordinary followers of Jesus? First, by learning to live in community with some other people. Second of all, letter B, by giving ourselves away in some kind of service to other people. Because you'll never really become a transformed person until you begin to give yourself away. And here at our church, we have so many ways to give our lives away to others. If you don't know, we have this incredible compassion ministry, a whole building out to my left there with a food bank, a clothing bank, a free medical clinic, a free legal clinic. At our Reveal campus, we have an incredible ministry called Revive that ministers to people who are poor and so forth in that community. Here at the Vineyard, we have large compassion ministry events like our Easter Hope giveaway, Back to School Outreach, Shoes of Love, Thanksgiving Food Basket Giveaway, Angel Tree. You could give yourself away in one of those ministries. If that doesn't appeal to you, you can give yourself away to teenagers in our youth ministry or to our children through our children's ministry. Or you could give yourself away by being a greeter or being an usher or coming in during the week and doing a myriad of things that need to be done around here. You could serve and give yourself away by serving in our coffee bar out here. By the way, if you're a barista and you're not serving in there, we need you. If you ever want to be a barista, we need you. We'll train you, but we need you in our coffee bar right now because there are a lot of angry people because they're not getting their coffee fast enough in this room right now. You could serve in the parking lot. You can drive a golf cart. I mean, there are so many hundreds of things that you get involved in. And if you've never done anything like that, you have no idea of the thrill of what it's like to be used by God, where He uses your life and your gifts to touch and help another person. And the amazing thing is as you give yourself away, that's when God fills you up even more and you become more like Him. I want to end with this. You know, over 39 years ago now, it's hard to believe, my wife, her name is Thora, and I, along with 10 other people in our home, we banded together, and we didn't use this language, but we basically said what I've written in number one. We said, we're going to start a life-saving society in this city. And we didn't have hardly anything. We didn't know anything. We started in our home. There's a picture of our home there. And the truth is, a lot of times it was super hard. But all of these people, they basically said, we know God is calling us to build a little hut of refuge. And so we're going to do our best to make that happen. And by God's grace, we did. And here we are, 39 plus years later. And I don't want you to clap. I'm not saying that for you to clap. I'm saying that because I want you to know this. Now it's your day. It's your day to build a little hut of refuge and to make a difference with your life. The question is, are you willing? Are you willing to say to Jesus, Jesus, I'm all in, man? Whatever it takes. Because here's what I think. I think if we could get the vast majority of us here in our church right now to say, I'm all in, you know what I think would happen? I think literally thousands of more people would end up coming to Christ through us. I mean, why couldn't that happen? Why couldn't thousands of more people come to Jesus through our efforts? It's happened before. I mean, it was a lot more improbable 2,000 years ago when Jesus started with 12. And it was a lot more improbable 39 years ago when we started in our house with 12. I mean, why couldn't Jesus use us to help transform our generation? I think that's what he wants to do. Are you all in? Let's pray. If you're willing, and this comes from your heart, would you take a moment just in your heart to tell Jesus that you want to be all in? Don't do it if you're not sure. This is not an easy thing. Because when you tell Jesus you're all in, he's going to test you. Are you really? But man, if you're willing to say, I'm all in, and that's from your heart, no matter how hard it is, I want to tell you from experience, there's nothing better. There is nothing better than being all in to Jesus. And then maybe you need to tell Jesus that you want to do your next step, whatever that is, baptism, ministry training, joining a small group, tithing, serving, what is it for you? May the Lord give us grace as we begin 2025 to actually live out the commitments that many of us are making here today. I think 2025 is going to be an amazing year. I really do. Would you stand, please? I want to ask the ministry team to come forward. If you'd like to receive prayer today about anything, doesn't have to have anything to do with the message, or maybe it does, but whatever you'd like prayer for, we'd love to pray for you. Just stick around and come to the front, but I want to dismiss us with a quick prayer. So, Lord, I pray a blessing on all my friends, and as they go, God, would you bless each one? Bless them, keep them, cause your face to shine upon them, be gracious to them. Lift up your favor upon them, God, and give them peace. And it's in Jesus' name I pray. And everybody said, amen. Say hi to a bunch of people on your way out. Have a great day. God bless. See you soon.